We're going to try to figure out what Gordon Hayward will do, what he should do, and set the table for this offseason. And I'm getting Keith Smith to help out with it on this Tuesday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Hi there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. Welcome back to another Locked On Celtics podcast here for you Monday through Friday as the offseason officially begins in the NBA. And as I've said before, and as you'll hear me say in this podcast, a little bit of a different offseason. We're not quite sure what's happening, so we're going to try to figure it out. And the big question for the Boston Celtics is Gordon Hayward. So I got Keith Smith, who knows the collective bargaining agreement, has done a lot of work on figuring out the collective bargaining agreement, what the salary cap will be, what the tax issues will be, so on and so forth. So you can get a good sense of this offseason. What's the landscape going to look like? And we're going to talk about it here. In fact, Keith and I already had this conversation. It went for an hour, so I'm going to split it up into two podcasts. So today, we're setting the landscape. We're letting you get a real, honest-to-goodness look at how this offseason is shaping up across the league, the decisions that Gordon Hayward has in front of him, what he's looking at, what will influence him. Tomorrow, a lot deeper conversation on Gordon Hayward himself, why certain scenarios would work, why will he opt in, why wouldn't he opt in? What can the Celtics do? What are their options? That's going to be tomorrow's show. So let's just get into this. First of all, welcome any new listeners. If you're new, welcome aboard. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Hope you enjoy it enough to subscribe by the end of the show. All of you new listeners, thanks for sticking with the podcast now that the offseason has begun. Still going Monday through Friday. It's a Monday through Friday daily podcast for you. For now, at some point during the dead period when things slow down, I'll probably dip to like 3 days a week for a short time, but for now, it's a five-day-a-week podcast to get you everything you need to know about the Boston Celtics. It's the number one Boston Celtics podcast in the world, and that's because you guys have rated and reviewed and have stuck around and shared the podcast. So let's just dive into it. Keith Smith, who works for Celtics Blog, is great at the salary cap. He and I have a great discussion here on the landscape of the league, what we're waiting on, information that we're working with, things that we're assuming, and all of that, all kind of leading up to what the Celtics have, what moves they, what actual kind of options they might have for moves, and it all leads up to the Gordon Hayward talk. So here's my conversation, part one of my conversation with Keith Smith. Keith, thanks for hopping on. It's season's over, and now comes the guessing. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, man. It's the longest season ever, followed by the most uncertain offseason ever, right?
It's so bizarre. It's hard to say what's next. And just so people know, like, I sent you a message earlier today just wondering about the option deadlines, because I, in all of my looking around, I saw option dates for like Gordon Hayward and Enes Kanter this week. And it turns out, nothing's happening this week. Nothing's happening next week. Nothing's probably happening for the rest of the month, really, until they figure out their finances, until the league and the union can sit down and collectively bargain things, and then they can start setting out a timeline. We're just kind of waiting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what I've been kind of hearing from folks around the league was, once it became clear the draft was not going to happen almost immediately after the season, because the teams hadn't had a chance to do any of the in-person meetings with the players. And in the there's this misconception that the workouts are really important. It's really not. It's the chance to talk to them for hours one-on-one, get to know who they are, and also the medical, right? That's the key component of getting a guy into your facility. And teams were like, we are not doing a draft just a week or so after the season ends without that. You know, and you can't blame them. This is, you know, for the first round, you're entering into a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract agreement with guys. You're going to need to see them in person. So once that became clear, then they said, all right, all those adjustments we made to option dates and guarantee dates and, you know, all the other stuff that goes along with that, trade exceptions, everything, that's all off the board. We're taking that off the table now. It's all going to be TBD. Draft is November 18th. That's the extent of what we know right now. We don't know anything else.
Yeah. It's a frustrating way to cover the league, but it is what it is. Like, it's, and I tried to emphasize this to people on last night's podcast. So, and I'm going to continue to try to emphasize it because the league needs to continue doing business. And they need to figure out so much. Like, we're really in an unprecedented time. Just because we got through the bubble, it doesn't mean like it's all over. Starting over for next season might be harder than pulling the bubble together. Because at least with the bubble, you knew, okay, yeah, we need a centralized location. We found a centralized location. We're going to talk to the scientist. Here's our protocol. Boom. Go. Obviously, it was a logistical nightmare, but now we know the union's not going to agree to a regular season bubble. They're not going through that again.
No.
So they have, first of all, to count the money to figure out exactly how bad it was. They need to come to an agreement over how to mitigate those losses and spread them out over the course of however many seasons. And that's going to be a new collective bargaining agreement, basically. With artificial salary caps. And then they have to figure out, like, okay, now that we know these numbers, here are your dates, players to opt in. Here are your dates, teams to pick up options. And then they have to put a schedule together.
Yep. That's all.
That's
just
all.
Just that.
And I was reading John Hollinger's piece on The Athletic, and he's talking about they want to do the full 82 games. They want to see if they can do it with fans in the seats, which, I don't know, good luck with that. But, yep. I mean, any amount of fans in the seats is better than no fans. So if they can figure out some sort of rapid testing, maybe they can pull something off. I don't know. But they're talking about baseball-style, like, multiple-game series. Can you imagine the Knicks rolling into Boston and playing, like, two or three games against the Celtics?
Yeah, right.
And then the Celtics go on the road.
Like the playoffs, but weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Then, you know, like, yeah, head to Philly for 3 days. That would be a wild thing to cover. So just so fans know, listeners know, there's so much that is in play here. But I feel like you're one of the people that's working under solid assumptions. So I think we can start to look at the Celtics options with some level of confidence, I will say, because I think everybody's under the impression that it's going to be $109 million flat, no increase, no decrease in the salary cap. Is that, I know you've put together your cap projections. Is that the assumption you're working on? Keith and I continue our conversation in just a moment. First, rockauto.com is the place you need to go if you need anything for your car. Don't bother going to one of those chain stores. Don't bother wasting your time going to one of those stores where they're just going to sit in front of a computer and enter all the same information that you can enter yourself into rockauto.com, and they're going to steer you to whatever they have in stock or whatever brand they might deal with, where Rock Auto is going to give you the best price, eliminating the middleman and saving you a bunch of money. For example, if you're looking for a fuel pump assembly for a Honda Odyssey, that's $354 at Advance. It's $217 at rockauto.com. So why bother? why go to a place where they have different price tiers for professionals and do-it-yourselfers? That doesn't make any sense. Why go to a place that will change their prices based on what the market will bear? Go to rockauto.com, a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years, and they have a catalog that's unique and easy to navigate. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck, from the complicated to the very simple, something like windshield wipers, a carpet, whatever you need for whatever your skill level. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. That's very, very important that you write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Hey, do you hit a wall in the middle of the afternoon? It could be one of those mental walls, or maybe you're just tired. Maybe you can't think straight. Maybe you can't brainstorm any new ideas. Maybe it's a physical wall. Maybe you're trying to get to the gym. You're trying to break through and get a new high or another rep. There's one thing you can do to help break through that wall, and it's Built Go. It's from the people who make Built Bars, which I love. I've started using Built Go. It's a very healthy replacement for an energy drink, and it's not fake energy. It lasts, and it's natural. It's a little ounce and a half package, so you can throw it in your briefcase, you can throw it in your golf bag, you can throw it in your gym bag. It's the best workout gel on the market. It's a 5-hour energy without that same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for your body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. The flavors, delicious. Peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint. It combines collagen protein with the energy gel. The collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into my system fast. Plus, it's easy on my stomach. It's loaded with the good stuff to ignite my workout, like beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. Built Go then kicks in to keep me going with B6 and B12 vitamins. The collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, skin, and health. So it literally actually make you look better. So go to BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. 20%. Use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify.
I am, yeah. So what happened with that is that, for me, came out of multiple conversations with teams and with agents, some folks who work in the league itself, and it seems like that's where things are heading. The Players Association is likely to come in and say, well, let's just go with what the projection was for next season, which was 115. The NBA is likely to say one of two things, either fine, but we're going to keep 80% of the salaries in escrow and hold them there. Or they're going to more likely to come back and say, no, let's do something like 100 million. And then we know how the game is played. Sure. Right? You ask for a lot, they say no, they ask for a little, and then you meet in the middle. And it sounds like everybody is more or less in an agreement of 109 feels about the best thing you can do. Nobody wants one thing that is 100% out. They are not using the BRI formula, which is the basketball-related income formula, which is what sets the cap,
yeah,
to set the cap, because it'll set it at around $87 million. And that's not happening, right? Like, that's, you know, you're talking going back several years now to that number. So, and nobody wants to see another massive cap spike like they saw a couple years ago, because that puts teams and players in a rough spot, because a bunch of guys get paid that shouldn't, because teams have to pay out 90% of the salary floor. So nobody wants to see it go in this season at this coming season at like 90 million. And then in 2 or 3 years, when things are better or maybe even back to normal, are, you know, now we're at 115 million. And we've got this $25 million spike. Nobody wants that. So that's off the table as well. So what you're going to see is likely they settle at 109 million because that makes sense. And then they'll bump the escrow amount, which is essentially the amount the teams hold back from paying the players initially, so that when it comes down to it and they do all the accounting at the end of the season, they can make sure they do the 50-50 revenue split, which is what it's got to be. Then they'll either pay the players out more or the owners keep more if they came up shy on their revenue projections. So you'll see the escrow amount go up, but the cap likely be artificially set. But the one caveat to that, what it sounds like they may do, because you had teams like the Celtics, which we'll probably get into, which maybe weren't planning on being a deep into the luxury tax team, might have been, all right, a move or two and we can get out of the tax. They may set the luxury tax line higher than what it would have been normally. It may be at what it is. So what the projection I'm working off of, which is, again, combining what a lot of the teams are doing, is a cap of flat cap of about $109 million, but the tax going up to about $139 million, which is where it was projected to be prior to everything kind of going sideways.
That's pretty important, because if the tax stayed flat with the salary cap, then you're looking at all of the team planning potentially being harmed, right? Like teams, maybe the Celtics don't care as much, or there are certainly teams out there that really don't care. But if you're looking at a tax line of 139 and all of a sudden it drops, what was it this year? 130?
Almost 133, 132.6.
Right. So that $7 million difference is the difference between, if it stayed lower and somebody dips into that tax that had planned for it and didn't dip into that tax, that team now runs the risk of becoming a repeater down the road.
Correct.
And the repeater tax is really where people, where teams get crushed. So let's stick with the Celtics right now. Let's just stick with the sure. Celtics, because the Gordon Hayward opt-in is what's looming over the Boston Celtics. And Danny Ainge said after the season that they were operating as if they were going to be a tax team. If Hayward opts in, have you projected this out? Is there a way that they can avoid the tax if he opts in?
Well, it gets really tough there. Let me get to that sheet real quick. So if Hayward opts in, and I'm working under the assumption that Cantor also opts in.
Right.
Because he's not going to just let $5 million go, especially in this market. So if you get those two guys opting in, and then you're sitting right there at – this is before you get to anybody else. So this is just those two opting in and all the guaranteed salaries. You're already at $133 million. So you're already pushing the heck out of the tax.
Yeah.
Now, we know they're going to bring Daniel Theis back
at
$5 million. So now you're already over. Or you're about to where I'm projecting the tax line to be. You'll be just under. And then you've got to still fill out the roster, because you'd have three more roster spots to fill out at that point, a minimum of two. But they'd probably fill out the whole thing, because the Celtics rarely go with roster spots completely open. Now, that's before you do anything with the draft picks. That's before you do anything with Javonte Green, Semi Ojeleye, or any of the free agents, Taco Fall, Tremont Waters, or Brad Wanamaker. So essentially, they're at the tax. They're going to be in the tax. Now, if Hayward opts in, can you get out of it? Sure. They're not so far over that they couldn't. They could use one of those picks to dump Cantor's salary, the 30th pick, $5 million. Mm-hmm. That's about probably what the going rate is going to be. It used to be about every 15 to 20 million in bad salary was worth a first round pick, but it's all relative, the 30th pick, and teams will know Boston's trying to dump him to get out of the tax. So yeah, maybe you use that pick. You could get off Cantor's salary. That brings you down within range. Then maybe you use the second rounder to get rid of Poirier, and his $2+ million, and now you're right about where you need to be. So they're not completely out of the realm of possibility of getting out of the tax if they start out over it. The challenge is, that's not really adding anybody of super high value to the roster, though, or doing anything like that. So you make trades that bring on money, or if you do any kind of usage of what will be the taxpayer MLE, of five to above five-ish million or so, mm-hmm. you do anything with that, that now makes it that much harder. So, you know, that's where it kind of becomes a, you know, you're bringing it down on one side, you're going up on the other, and you're kind of constantly balancing right around that tax line.
For looking for ways to improve this team, I think it's important for people to understand how the Celtics, what options the Celtics have to improve this team. I tried to lay it out, on Mass Live, just the little things that the Celtics have. They don't have a lot of space roster wise, so they're going to have to make some tough decisions. Cantor not being a Celtics next year is my expectation. I don't think he wants to be back here. I don't think the team really wants him back. And if he opts in, it's because he's back channeled his way around the league, and no one really is willing to pay him anywhere close to that $5 million to be, you know, anywhere he wants to be. So yeah. I'm sure the Celtics will look into trading him, but that's not going to bring anything back. So the options the Celtics have for improving this team, I see one, trading up in the draft, flipping 14 and 26, and then maybe you add a young player or something, depending on your appetite, whatever Danny Ainge's appetite is, trading up to get a better player in the top 10 that you think can contribute right away. That's one option. The other option is the taxpayer mid-level, which is going to be somewhere in that $5 million range. And then the third option is
5.7.
And then that third option is making an actual trade where you're if Gordon Hayward opts in, you're trading Gordon Hayward plus, you know, whatever, or a young player, or Marcus Smart, or, you know, some combination of players that I know people listening are going to be like, whoa, wait a minute, what are you talking about? But that, if I'm just laying out options for teams to, ways that this Celtics team can improve themselves. Am I missing anything? Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
No, I think you're pretty much on it. Now, I will say this year, because there's only going to be six teams that have cap space, there's very few teams that are going to be there. So everybody's going to be basically using their exceptions to do work, which is normally how it gets done in the NBA anyway. There's, you know, once every 3, 4, 5 years, there's a whole bunch of teams with cap space and they make a, you know, ton of signings and the like, but like what we saw happen last summer. But this year, why I bring that up is I think there might be some solid values on the veteran minimum market. You might see guys who can actually play because they get squeezed out. And what it ends up coming down to, I'm not saying this guy's a guy the Celtics should sign, but a guy like Carmelo Anthony, who is a 10-plus year veteran, his minimum salary, what he actually gets paid, is going to be close to what the biannual exception will be. It'll be just over, you know, right around $3 million or mm-hmm. so. So if you're a guy like Carmelo Anthony, you could either take slightly more money from a worse team, or you could take slightly less and be on a contender like the Celtics, and maybe even play a rotation role. Now, again, I'm just using Carmelo as an example because he's a vet that people know has been around for a million years. But replace him with a guy like Paul Millsap, any other number of names. So I think there will be some values to be found with those veteran minimum contracts. But the challenge for the Celtics is now you're playing the waiting game on that, because you're going to have to wait it out for a while to get those, because those guys will know that's always there for me. You can almost always sign a veteran minimum deal. So what those guys will do is they'll wait and see, like, can I get something a little bit better from Denver or from Memphis and be maybe the guy who can push them over the top or something like that. Those guys will hold out a little bit more. And as you said, I think the biggest issue facing the Celtics, you know, amongst all of it, is the roster crunch. They just don't have roster spots, and no guy's going to come in on a minimum contract without a thought of, I'm definitely making the team. You know, I don't want to have to, you know, fight with a Semi Ojeleye or Javonte Green
right.
for a roster spot. You know, nobody's going to want to do that. That's, you know, really a value. So yeah. So I think, you know, beyond that, maybe being a way to add talent, I'm with you. It's a, you know, the taxpayer mid-level $5.7 million, can use that, or it starts to become things like trades, you know, and clearing out things out, or, you know, doing something in the draft. And, you know, they've had luck getting contributors in the draft, you know, recently in that kind of middle to end of the draft range. You know, Grant Williams was a contributor. Romeo Langford showed some flashes at times. Terry Rozier, you know, obviously became a pretty good player. So I'm not counting that out by any means, because, you know, I think by any time you're picking where the Celtics are, hoping you're getting a true rotation player out of that, that starts to get a little more nervous for me. That tends to be a little more of a longer range type thing.
Is there any way that the Celtics open up that non-taxpayer mid-level? Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding, you can still technically pay the tax and use your non-taxpayer
yep.
mid-level. It's a kind of a yeah. misnomer. But yeah. as long as, yeah. like, what are the, am I right? Is it as long as you're not over the tax at the time of the signing?
Well, so it's even more complicated than that. You actually only go down to the non-taxpayer is if you're actually up at the tax apron, which is that's that amount up and over the tax. That's the hard cap line.
Yes.
But where that becomes a real challenge is even if you have the non-taxpayer, which projects to be about 9.25 million, even if that's what you have is the non-taxpayer, if you spend an amount equal to or more than the taxpayer, you become hard capped at that tax apron. So that's why where the Celtics are, they would be barring a trade where they move out significant salary, like get Cantor off the books, or you know, combination of Poirier and Carson Edwards and things like that. Because of that, they are highly unlikely to spend more than the taxpayer amount, even if they have the non-taxpayer. So I don't think you're going to see them spend more than 5.7, because once you're at the hard cap, there are no exceptions to that. Right. I don't know if you remember, if the folks listening remember, but a few years back, the Clippers had to basically pay to get guys moved off the books because they were dancing around the hard cap. They had to play games with Tyrone Wallace, who was a two-way player that they really loved, back when the travel counted as a two-way day, where he would travel on his own. He'd fly like a commercial flight on his own to the games, so he wasn't traveling with the team. The Warriors had to dance around the hard cap all of last year. And just so everybody knows, how you become hard capped is either, like I said, you spend the equivalent of the taxpayer mid-level of your non-taxpayer, you use the biannual exception, or you acquire a player via sign and trade, meaning you bring a player in that was signed and traded to you. The reason why those all hard cap you is teams that are at or above the apron are not allowed to use any of those. They lose the biannual. They clearly drop down to the taxpayer mid-level exception, and they are not allowed to accept a player via sign and trade. So that was a very long answer to your very simple question.
No.
Can you go over the tax?
No, but it's fine. But like, that's, I think people, I'm spending this week, like, I really want to try to set the table. And I think if you're listening to a podcast, you're not just the casual fan. I think people who listen to the podcasts are the people who really want to know, especially now the season's over. And yep. I do see a drop in the podcast listenership, because there are a certain level of people who are a little bit more casual that do drop off. But if you're still listening now, if you're listening to this show, because I'm going to put Keith Smith in the description, I'm going to tell people what the show is about, and there are going to be people who go like, okay, yeah, I want to know about this stuff.
Yep.
And some of it may end up sounding like a little bit of a masterclass, and it may sound like so numbers heavy, but this is my goal for the people listening. Is I want you to understand the limitations. So when you turn on sports talk radio and they go, oh, why don't we just trade for this guy? Why don't we just trade for that guy? And you could yeah. sit there in your car and be like, no, idiot. I just learned that you can't do that.
Yep.
And that's part of, I think, just like being a smart fan, you understand, like, if you're playing around on the trade machine, then you understand, like, I can't do certain things here. So, and these things were put in place because teams used to play fast and loose with the sign and trades, and it's designed to level the playing field. So teams like the Celtics this past season were hard capped because they acquired Kemba Walker via sign and trade. And it's designed to prevent teams, these big market teams, from just telling your small market team, yeah, go ahead, we'll sign that guy to an insane number that you're not going to pay. We'll pay it and we'll just take him in. And then you, this other team, you sign that guy to an insane number and we'll just take it all in. It's fine. And you can, it's designed to stop the workaround for acquiring talent. Like, okay, you don't have the cap space, but you can sign and trade your way to a super team. So anyway, the Celtics were able to manage the hard cap this past season because they weren't anywhere near the luxury tax, right? They weren't a tax-paying team. They were at $119 million.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago that they ended up a tax team.
So
just slightly, but
the repeater tax
this past season.
The repeater tax is 3 out of 4 years, right?
Correct. And it doesn't have to be 3 years in a row. It just has to be 3 out of 4 years.
Right.
But then the important part is it doesn't kick in on that third year. It kicks in for the year after.
Right.
So if you're 3 out of 4 years, then in year five is when you would be a repeater team.
Right. So there is, and I operate like this. I assume that they don't want to pay the repeater tax. Now, they may not care because the team that's in the repeater tax, theoretically, you've been a good team because you're paying these guys a lot. And Jason Tatum is going to be on his max extension. And, you know, Jaylen Brown's going to be, you know, on his extension. And whomever else you've acquired by that point, you're paying a lot of money out because you're paying good players and you should be good. And deep playoff runs are money makers for teams. And so you pay the tax because, you know, it's worth it. Even the repeater tax. But I assume that if they can avoid it, they'd prefer to avoid it. If they can avoid paying the tax this year, then that resets the clock because there's no way to get 3 out of 4 years if they're not a tax-paying team this upcoming season. So that's part of why I've always advocated here for them to try to find a way to get Hayward to opt out and sign long-term. But that conversation, I normally don't take into account like the back end. I'm looking at the front end of the deal, the first 3 years of the deal, and thinking, like, look, Hayward's going to get some security. He's going to get his money eventually. He's going to get a guaranteed contract. The Celtics are going to drop below the tax. Maybe that could even allow them to use the non-taxpayer because they feel like if Hayward's starting salary starts low enough that they can blah, 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 whatever. Like, clear enough a salary out, still use the non-taxpayer, get a good player in, a better player in, and then you can build a winning team. And then 3-4 years from now, figure it out, you know, trade them, buy them out, whatever. You can deal with it then. But,
my thing on Hayward has been consistent, because I'm in agreement for you. The best thing for the Celtics is that he opts out. He signs a long-term deal. I know people say, yeah, that was the best thing for the Celtics for Al Horford too, but there's not a Hayward suitor out there of the teams that have cap space this summer. None of them are going to approach him with an offer that Boston cannot easily beat. So he would have to want to leave for that to happen, for him to go. And I just don't see the team there. He's not probably going to demand a sign and trade anywhere, because again, no one's going to want to pay him a significant sum. So what I have always kind of advocated for was opt out to a lesser number. But I know some people say, well, you know, there's two things. One is, well, he owes us money. He doesn't owe the Celtics anything. You know, he broke his leg in half.
Right.
Like, he doesn't owe them anything. Like, it, you know, it sucks. It happens, but, you know, it is what it is. But beyond that is, you know, he should do 4 years, $80 million. Okay. Maybe he should. But what I have long thought is, what I would try to do is, if he signs, get enough so that it frees up that additional flexibility for the team under the tax line in those kind of things, and gives them tools, but front load it so that he's just getting a little bit. If you're going to do 480, pay him more of that 480 up front so that it declines as it goes. I am a big proponent of guys once they pass 30, 31 or so, which Hayward's right in that range. I like declining deals, because then as their production declines, the deal also declines.
Right.
Now, it's never going to, you can't do, it's not the NFL. You can't pay a guy, you know, $30 million 1 year and $5 million the next. Like, it doesn't work that way. It, you know, but if you gave him a $27 million in the first year or something like that, or let's say $25 million mm-hmm. in that first year, it could go down to 23, because it can go down by 8%. Then it could go down by that same $2 million each year after that. And that's how you do 25, 23, 21, 19. And then you're there, you're at maybe 80, 90 million, but you're in a range that I think makes a lot more sense than it would otherwise for the Celtics. And then as Jason Tatum's salary starts to really expand into, you know, the 30s, and Jaylen Brown is starting to approach that second contract or third, what would be his third contract and those kind of things, Hayward is no longer that, you know, huge dollar max salary guy there, and, you know, and those things. And that also helps you, as Kemba Walker is on a max deal, you know, for the next few years as well, if Hayward's contract was sliding down. But I don't know what it's so hard, because I'm sure in his mind there is some sense of, you know, hey, I just, you know, put up 17, 6, and 5 or whatever it was on really great percentages. And yeah, I was as the fourth option, you know. You put me as the number one option on this team. That might have been 28-7, and, you know, still good percentages, maybe a little bit less, but I can still really play. You know, why am I starting to take these? You know, I'm doing air quotes, which no one can see, but air quotes discount deals. You know, it's not a, you know, well, why would I start to do those kind of things? And that's all part of the negotiation, right? And now what the hammer the Celtics can kind of wield is, all right, look, you don't want to do that. $34 million is a hell of a trade chip for us mm-hmm. next season. And you kind of, you know, I don't think Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens would be callous towards the guy and kind of hold that over his head and remind him every day of, hey, we could trade you, you know, but I think that's just the reality of the situation is, you know, hey, that's enough to bring in, you know, two pretty good players,
right?
Or one really, really good player, you know, for that amount of money. And that's going to be something that weighs in the back of his mind too, because, you know, it, you know, especially with a young family and those kind of things, security in the sense of money is one thing, but security in the sense of, I know where we're going to be and where we're going to live for the next several years, that's a whole other thing entirely.
We're going to cut it off right there. Tomorrow, part two of the conversation with Keith Smith. You can follow him on Twitter at KeithSmithNBA. Follow his work over at Celtics Blog. Tomorrow, much, much more Hayward focused. So why he would opt in, which everybody expects, but why would he opt out? It's not unheard of. The reasoning is there. And Al Horford is part of the reasoning of why he wouldn't opt out. So that's going to be tomorrow. If you're new and you haven't subscribed, please do that to get that directly to your device. You can follow on Spotify or wherever podcasts exist. Regular subscribers, a 5-star rating, a good written review would be amazing. And of course, sharing the podcast with family, friends, perfect strangers, coworkers, whomever, it doesn't matter. If anybody ever asks you, I need a Celtics podcast, do you know one? You say, yeah, it's the Locked On Celtics podcast, and it's part of the Locked On Podcast Network.